Welcome to RISE, Radio Internet Story Exchange, a weekly public affairs program helping you to ask questions, find answers, and distinguish the truth from the lie. I'm Kelly Ramirez. 9/11 was the trigger, not the inspiration, but the trigger for the formal installation of a fascist dictatorship in the United States under the guise of security. The recent passage of the Homeland Security Act was the final step in installing the legal framework for stripping both immigrants and citizens of the basic protections, liberties, and privacy expectations that were the hallmarks of American freedom. Ollie North's shredder has been taken out of the closet, and the Bill of Rights has been shoved through it in the name of a so-called war on terrorism. But where are the terrorists? In the caves of Afghanistan? Or in the halls of the Justice Department? On Friday night, November 15, 2002, over 120 people filled the Willits, California City Council chambers. They came to hear a talk given by ACLU attorney Judith Volkart, titled, Taking Liberties, Can Our Constitution Survive the War on Terrorism? She spoke in detail about legislation passed since 9/11, primarily focusing on provisions of the Patriot Act.
I want to thank very much this committee that has formed around the issue of our civil liberties and what's happening in our country now. And I want to thank you all for showing up to hear me. Many of us, as a result of September 11th, travel less. We certainly leave more time for check-in once we get to the airport. And if you are like me, you hold your children and your good friends and your family closer than you did before. We are less likely to balk at the restrictions and limitations that are being placed on our own privacy, and we are more likely to fly the American flag. Our country is this week in an elevated state of alert, as declared by the Homeland Security Advisory Group. And we all know that if, in fact, we do go to war with Iraq, it is very likely that we are going to see an escalation in terrorist activity in this country. So few Americans, and I'm sure maybe even no one in this room, disputes the absolute need for increased security in the wake of September 11th. This meeting, this gathering tonight, was initiated and organized by members of your own community. And I have to tell you that it's part of an increasing groundswell of individual citizen concern about the government's response to the terrorist attacks, about George Bush and Attorney General Ashcroft's determination to cut back on our freedoms in the name of safety. So the subject tonight is personal freedom versus personal safety. Will our Constitution, which really is the document that holds the core fundamental values of who we are as Americans, survive the war on terrorism? The answer to that question is, it depends on you. So tonight I am going to make a direct appeal to you. It is possible for us to be both safe and free. And I don't raise this issue of safety versus personal freedom as sort of a philosophical question for us to ponder tonight, because it's not philosophical. It's not philosophical for A.J. Brown, who is a college freshman in Durham, North Carolina. She was visited by the Secret Service because someone told them that she had in her possession a poster that was critical of George Bush. And in fact, she did. It was a picture of Bush who, as you know, when he was governor of Texas, very much supported the death penalty. It was a picture of him holding a noose. And it was the Secret Service who knocked on her door and talked to her. And although after their interview, or inquisition, however you want to term it, was finished, they determined that the poster was harmless. They asked her the questions whether she had any maps of Afghanistan or any pro-Taliban material in her apartment. Then there's Danny Muller. I mean, he's traveled the world all over for Voices in the Wilderness, which is an organization that opposes economic sanctions in Iraq. He and one of his colleagues went to the post office to buy 4,000 stamps to do a mailing, and he asked the clerk behind the desk not to give him a stamp that had an American flag on it. And the clerk said, well, can we give you one with the Statue of Liberty? And he said, sure, I love freedom. I'll take Statue of Liberty. Clerk excused herself from the desk, and within a few minutes, the police showed up, and he and his colleague were questioned about their patriotism. They could not buy stamps that day. The colleague returned the next day, and when he returned, he was sent to the Postmaster General's office and sat there, was interviewed by the Postmaster General about what it is that Voices in the Wilderness really does. But my favorite story is Kate Raphael, who is a California peace activist in the Bay Area. She was so shocked when FBI agents showed up at her door because they kept asking her about, you know, Muslim men, you know, and she finally said to them, you know, if it's your job to hunt for Islamic fundamentalist terrorists, then it's your job to know that they don't hang out with lesbian Jews in San Francisco. Charlotte Wu still doesn't know why the police or how the police arrived at her door after she'd been talking on the telephone with a friend about a video game. She's a video addict. And she was talking about, you know, how do you plant the bomb in the video game? And they knocked on her door. U.S. citizens have been banned as passengers on airlines from flights because the flight crew or someone in the passenger cabin itself told the airline they did not feel comfortable with this person flying with them. 1,200 Muslim men who are today still being held in secret jails. Some of them have already been deported without any notification to their families, without ever having been charged with a crime or given the right to an attorney. So freedom versus safety. And frankly, it's not a philosophical question for us either, because it affects our daily lives. And it became very personal to me when the Attorney General Ashcroft described anyone who disagrees with the administration's politics as giving ammunition to the enemy. Now, this statement is alarming. I mean, at the least, it's disheartening. Coming from a government official who has sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America, which includes the First Amendment. And, you know, debate, open discussion is the heart of what our democratic system is all about. So let's talk now about the United States Patriot Act. What is it? Well, it's the largest expansion of police power in decades, basically. It was initiated and conceived by Attorney General John Ashcroft. It was ramrodded through Congress under the pressure of George Bush, and it passed in October 2001 under the auspices of fighting the war on terrorism. So what does it do? Well, the language is deliberately vague, frankly, and we don't know the full parameter of what the USA Patriot Act does. But before I get into the specifics of the act itself, I just want to sort of step back from the specifics and just talk about a big picture pattern. The USA Patriot Act is really the first of many steps that our government has taken since 9/11, in the name of 9/11, that results in serious shifts in the balance of power in this country. Remember in the sixth grade, we learned about the separation of powers, the balance of powers, checks and balances. You know, we got these three branches. We got the elected legislature, which protects us against the executive branch that's always hungry for power and determined to give itself as much as it can. And then you got the judicial branch, you know, that, in my opinion, sort of breathes life into the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and protects the minority against the will of the majority. And as your own district attorney, Norm Roman, has very boldly said, you know, when you give power to government, you always risk abuse. So who gets to decide what power is given to government? Not just the executive only, it's a check and balance, okay? But here, in this case, with the USA Patriot Act, the legislature was not there to protect us. The USA Patriot Act passed with little debate and absolutely minimal dissent. There was not one member of Congress who could be found in the weeks after the passage of the USA Patriot Act who had read the act in full. Only one senator, Russell Feingold, bless his soul, Democrat, Wisconsin, dared to rise in opposition and voted no. There was no conference report. There was no committee report. Now, what does that mean? Most senators don't read the bills, but they do read the shortened versions, and that's the conference reports and the committee reports. It means there was absolutely no free, open discussion of this bill on the floor of Congress, much less any kind of robust debate about the specifics of the bill itself. So your representatives in Congress and my representatives in Congress, you know, they were scared. They were afraid that they would be tagged with some term being non-patriotic. But you know, when it comes right down to it, many of the provisions that are in the USA Patriot Act have almost nothing to do with the dangers of 9/11. And the effectiveness of preventing terrorism today as a result of what's passed in the Patriot Act can show that. The provisions are really part of a wish list that the intelligence agencies in this country have had for decades. And this is not the first anti-terrorist act that's been passed through Congress. If you remember, about two sessions ago, there was a very large anti-terrorist act that came through. It had draconian provisions in it against youth, you know, defining them as gang members, defining gang as almost like, you know, terrorists in training, and imposed criminal sanctions against minors that, you know, shocked my conscience. And, you know, we had been fighting against that anti-terrorist legislation and thought going into the session that preceded 9/11, we actually had enough votes on the floor to overturn some of the worst provisions of the old anti-terrorist bill. I mean, there was not one member of Congress who was going to vote to water down any terrorist bill after 9/11. So, you know, the terrorist bill that was passed 2 years ago wasn't based on the war on terrorism. It was based on the war that you are all very familiar with because you deal with the helicopters all the time. It's based on the war on drugs, right, which never has an end and can never be won. So we still have not had any open debate on the USA Patriot Act. Although before the elections, you know, Congress was beginning to stir just a little bit. They had some hearings where they called Ashforth forward, and they asked him, you know, how are you implementing the USA Patriot Act? And his answer was, you know, I cannot and will not divulge that information. It is the Judiciary Committee of Congress that oversees the Attorney General's office. Now, given the results of the last election, that the Republicans now control both houses, that their party members chair all the major committees, including the Judiciary Committee, and that many of the newly elected and re-elected perceive that they owe their seats to the president's efforts, we are not very hopeful that the majority party is going to spur a lot of debate on the U.S. Patriot Act in the coming session. So that's what the legislature has done. Now, we've got the executive grabbing power. We've got the legislature sleeping. What about the judiciary? You know, judicial review is the cornerstone of our system of government, you know. It's that whole idea of having open hearings, knowing the evidence that's against you, who's charging you, independent review by some unbiased person or jury of your peers. What the USA Patriot Act and many of the provisions that have been passed since it has done is it really seizes from power, the power of the judges, to review very broad categories of enforcement requests that come from law enforcement. What does that mean? That means that law enforcement now, in many categories, does not have to present reasonable cause evidence to a judge before they can execute searches and seizures. Wiretapping, surveillance powers of the executive have greatly been expanded, and the provisions of the USA Patriot Act provide that judicial scrutiny is reduced and oftentimes eliminated. The Patriot Act has virtually stripped impartial arbiters, the judges, in immigration cases, in the INS cases, of their authority to be able to act at their own discretion. So, as if this is not enough, Ashcroft is trying to circumvent the American judicial system completely And, you know, that's the whole reason behind people being held in Guantanamo, because they're not on U.S. soil. They are not protected by the United States Constitution. But it goes farther than that. I mean, you may have heard about these secret courts. I mean, we've seen headlines in the last few months. You know, the one that I remember that I liked the best was, secret court says FBI misled judges 75 times, you know? Now, what's the secret court all about? We've had it for a long time. I mean, it's not something that the Patriot Act has created. It was created by the Foreign Intelligence Services Act, which has been around for a long time, and they're called FISA courts. What they are, they are an established court system that's used to review law enforcement requests that have to do with foreign intelligence gathering, okay? And they do that without having to apply constitutional principles. It's not a public court because it deals with national security concerns. The hearings are all closed. There are no published decisions. And it's really designed to circumvent the Fourth Amendment's protections against unreasonable searches and seizures, because the government in these foreign surveillance types of cases believe that our warrant and subpoena requirements are too strict for them to comply with. By all accounts, these FISA courts are rubber stamps. And the interesting thing is that they don't have unlimited jurisdiction. They cannot be used for law enforcement. Okay, there's a difference. Law enforcement and foreign surveillance, it's two different things. They can be used for foreign intelligence gathering only, but not to enforce laws. Got it? So the other provision about FISA courts is that they're not to be used against American citizens, because we got constitutional rights, right? Well, after 9/11, that firewall fell. The U.S. AG's office under Ashcroft this summer petitioned the FISA court to broaden its jurisdiction. And he wants to use FISA courts now for criminal prosecutions against American citizens. And for the first time in the history of the FISA court, they came public. And they said no. They said, in effect, what is being asked of us is to allow this court to be used for law enforcement purposes, to allow prosecutors to have direct control over FISA investigations against United States citizens. This presents a serious threat to privacy, and we won't do it. Ashcroft is appealing. And who's he appealing to? The secret FISA appellate court, right? Civil libertarians right away, you know, we wanted to file briefs. If it's an appellate court, let's file briefs. Let's brief these issues. No civil libertarian briefs were allowed, and during the oral arguments, to the degree that there were any, because it's a one-sided argument, right? No member of Congress was allowed to attend. Okay? Now, where do we get these FISA court judges? They are composed of judges that are taken from the district courts and the courts of appeal around the country, and they're chosen by the executive. They revolve. They stay on a while. They go off. The composition is always changing. They are served at the beck and call of the executive, pretty much. There's no congressional advice and consent as there is in normal federal judicial appointments.
Just 3 days after this speech, the FISA Court of Review handed John Ashcroft his victory by reversing the lower FISA court. The ruling weakened the quarter-century-old wall between foreign intelligence gathering and criminal prosecutions by upholding Patriot Act amendments to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which allow FISA wiretaps in cases where foreign intelligence gathering was a significant purpose for the wiretap. The earlier, higher standard was primary purpose. As a practical matter, there is no evidence that the FISA court, which has approved over 13,000 surveillance applications, ever disapproved one until May 2002. But the Court of Review's ruling officially limited the amount of review of surveillance applications the lower FISA court could conduct. They basically gave the Justice Department the power to utter the phrase foreign intelligence gathering as a de facto magic word to obtain a wiretap under criteria weaker than the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution requires in criminal cases. Hailing the decision, John Ashcroft said, quote, "In intelligence, in counterintelligence, and counterterrorism investigations, the court's ruling confirmed the Department of Justice's legal authority to integrate fully the functions of law enforcement and intelligence," unquote. You are listening to RISE, Radio Internet Story Exchange. I'm Kelly Romaris. Today's topic is Taking Liberties. Can our Constitution survive the war on terrorism?
So, you know, one of the things that you must have heard over and over in the election, that one of the lasting effects of the result of this year's election was going to be this administration is going to be appointing a lot of judges. Rehnquist, O'Connor, two Supreme Court justices are both rumored to be going to retire before this Bush administration is over. There are hundreds and hundreds of federal district court openings that Congress was able to block before Clinton left, that Bush will be filling now. So federal court judges, just a little review, sit for life. So the Republicans now chair the Judiciary Committee. They control the Senate. And the executive is responsible for appointing these judicial positions. So, you know, in all of this, I really do try to look for the humorous. You know, I see it's hard sometimes, but I got to keep myself going somehow. And the only humor I found in this is sort of discovering three ironies that I'm going to share with you. And you may or may not find them funny. I just have a little twisted sense of humor. One of the ironies is that, you know, the conservative view of government is that you decentralize power. You get it out of the hands of the feds and you stick it into the states. That's what, you know, the Republican, conservative Republican agenda has been for a long time. But, you know, here we've got one of the most conservative administrations we've ever had, and through legislation, through executive orders, internal policy changes, inside the Department of Justice, the Defense Department, and all the other executive agencies, more and more power is being amassed and retained at the executive level, okay? So police power in particular has almost always been the exclusive reign of the states. And we are finding now with the USA Patriot Act and others that federal police power is increasing exponentially. So that's one little irony I kind of got a kick out of. Am I here to ask you? You just say, okay, forget her humor. I also think it's very ironic to sort of witness the diminishing role of the judiciary. Okay, I mean, it is ironic. Bush has said as much that he has little faith in our courts, that they are an inconvenient obstacle. And that, okay, you got the joke already, right? Coming from an administration headed by a president who owes his office to the United States Supreme Court decision, I got to kind of chuckle on that. Okay, now we're getting on here. Now, the third one is, the third irony that I found is that we are in an era where the government is hiding behind the cloak of secrecy. I mean, I'll tell you some more stuff tonight before we're finished here. And our right to privacy at the same time and our freedom from government intrusion into our personal lives is seriously being jeopardized. So they get to hide. We have to show and tell all. I mean, the bottom line for me is, in this big picture scenario that I just talked to you about, is that the executive is getting more and more power. They are unsupervised and they are being unchecked. They are unbridled by either the legislature or the judiciary, okay? So let's sort of get out of the realm of this big picture because it isn't looking too good. Let's take a look down now at some of the specifics of the Patriot Act itself. I mean, the very name sort of says it, right? But if you think it's just a cute name, USA Patriot Act, wait until you hear this one. Each one of those letters stands for something. Okay, here we go. Uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism acts. Now, isn't that clever? Okay, I mean, that's the USA Patriot Act. So what does it do? Well, that's about the best part of it. I mean, it puts into place domestic changes that are so sweeping that even some conservatives who pushed really hard for Ashcroft's nomination and appointment, like the Family Research Council and the Free Congress Foundation, and even William Webster, whose name you've heard just lately with Pitt, you know, the Pitt principle has been going on. William Webster was the former FBI director, remember? Even he has come out, and they sort of decided that, you know, Ashcroft just may have gone too far, and they have begun to take their concerns public. So what does the Patriot Act do? First and foremost, it creates the federal crime of terrorism, okay? But the definition of terrorist is very, very broad. It could include anyone, citizen or not, who speaks out against the government. I mean, we are all wondering if dissent, you know, can somehow be defined as the threat of terrorism. I mean, imagine Barry Reingold's surprise to find the FBI at his doorstep, you know, after he criticized George Bush in a political argument he had at the 24-hour fitness center in San Francisco. Think about Jane Addams and Rebecca Gordon. They are lifelong South Bay activists. In August, I mean, just this August, a couple months ago, they came to San Francisco Airport, SFO, to check in for a flight from San Francisco to Boston. The ticket agent told them that their names appeared on the FBI no-fly list. They were held for FBI questioning. So here we have this very middle-class, very middle-aged, 54 and 52-year-old women standing in the middle of San Francisco's ticketing department, being questioned by not, they couldn't just send two guys, they had to send three guys, three police officers, and questioning them. I mean, eventually they were allowed to fly, but their ticket, on their ticket, the police put a big red S. And the source of this blacklist is still a mystery, okay? No agency has taken responsibility for managing it. Of course, being activists, they're out there trying to figure out what to do. They haven't figured that out yet. The S on the ticket marked them when they made the stops in Denver. You know, they were pulled aside and a special search was done. So Jan and Rebecca are not the only dissenters that are on the list. I mean, there was a group of 20 peace activists, including a 75-year-old nun, who were detained by law enforcement in April in the Milwaukee airport. They were on their way to Washington to protest that infamous School of the Americas and to also take a seminar on how to lobby. I mean, to this day, no official involved in their detention has been able to tell them why they were detained. They were barred from flying. And the ACLU was helping them file a Freedom of Information Act request to find out what the basis was for this police action. Nancy Oden, who some of you may recognize, a Green Party official, was banned from flying from Bangor, Maine to Chicago in November 2001. And she said that her ticket, too, had the big red S. That's what the Patriot Act sort of does. It creates this federal crime, and, you know, if we follow all those letters around, there's something in there about tools. So what's in the toolbox? I mean, what is it that they can do to us now to investigate? To investigate this new crime of federal terrorism, the Justice Department has given itself, because, after all, it was John Ashcroft who wrote and pushed this legislation through, expansive new powers to be able to invade our privacy, to be able to imprison us without due process, and to punish dissent. And it seriously compromises free speech. There are two provisions that I particularly want to point out to you that I find most onerous. One of them we've called the sneak and peek provision. This provision allows federal agents into your house, into my office, into your apartment with a search warrant, but when you are away, and it allows them to be able to make photographs, to be able to copy any files in your computer, take any physical property, and they do not have to suspect you of being involved in terrorism to do it. And so that's the peak part. What's the sneak part? The sneak part is they don't need to tell you they were there for months, if at all, okay? So to get a search warrant, I mean, they got to have a warrant, okay? But under the Patriot Act, to get a search warrant, all they have to do is to present the local judge with a certificate that says, you know, certificate signed under oath by this local police officer, that says that this search is relevant to an intelligence probe. What does that mean? Now, let's take it a step farther. Let's say you live here in Mendocino and your DA sort of has all these judges in a good place and they're going to protect your rights. The local Superior Court judges are not going to go for this kind of a warrant thing. Well, what does the USA Patriot Act do? It allows forum shopping, and that's legal shorthand to mean that they don't have to get the subpoena here in Mendocino County. They can get the subpoena in Birmingham, Alabama. It doesn't matter where they get the subpoena. They're federal agents, after all. And they can use that subpoena outside of the jurisdiction where the subpoena has been issued. Forum shopping. Okay, so they got to have a subpoena, but they can get it from any judge anywhere. But you know what? They don't always have to have a subpoena either. There are lots of exceptions that have been made in the USA Patriot Act where, upon request, schools, banks have to provide documentation without subpoena, merely with the request of the federal officers. Wiretapping, all it sort of takes is a reasonable suspicion of intelligence probes. They can do wiretapping. Okay, with a subpoena, but they can get the subpoena anywhere. They really don't have to have a subpoena. Now, when they get it, what are they going to do with it? Well, guess what? The Patriot Act says they can share it with any law enforcement official anywhere. There's no confidentiality once it's in the hands of law enforcement. They can share with anyone. Okay? So I think they've covered just about all their bases. I mean, if you were going to write the perfect tool, that sounds pretty good to me. So the second part of it that I find particularly onerous is what's called the magic lantern. And I don't know, maybe some of you techies in the audience know about the magic lantern, but it's been out since, it's been out a couple of years, but last fall, the Justice Department, the feds began using it. And what it is, it's a new computer technology that has been used since November of last year that reads even encoded internet messages. Okay? And here's the kicker. It can be installed on my computer without my knowledge. And it can be installed either through hacking devices or it can be installed if I sort of unwittingly download some attachment somewhere. I think that we should all realize that the days of anonymity on the web are pretty much over. You know, there used to be three websites, so you could get on, you could actually surf, browse anonymously. Two of those are out of business now, and the other one is on its way out. So once these websites are gone, searching anonymously is going to be very difficult to do, if at all. So, you know, those are the big things that I find the most offensive. I mean, there's so many things with the Patriot Act. But it just doesn't stop with the Patriot Act. It's like that was not enough for them, okay? And since the Patriot Act, we have seen executive orders coming out of Bush's office. We've seen Justice Department policy changes. We've seen massive fundings for things like the Neighborhood Watch Program that have increased even more the federal government's rights to be able to invade my constitutional rights. So let me just go down a little laundry list here of the kinds of things that the government now has pretty much unchecked access to, okay? Libraries, bookstores, media, okay? They are considered business records. And only with this little certificate certifying that the records are relevant to an intelligence probe, the FBI can get your library records, records of, so long as your library has them, records of the books that you've been checking out, what you've been reading, what you bought over the web from Amazon, what newspapers you are subscribing to. That means bookstore receipts, maybe even some notes that journalists may keep, may even be, if they keep them online, may even be searchable with this provision. Now, how does it apply? Well, there's this guy, he's a Bay Area scientist, lives in San Jose, he got a Stanford degree. He's Pakistani, he's been here for 20 years, he's a permanent resident, but he's not a citizen. FBI came to his door because they found that he had been buying books on eBay that, in the Justice Department's opinion, would allow him to have the knowledge to be able to make bombs. So they came to his door and they asked him, Why are you buying and reading these books? And so, you know, he explained to them what he did, where he did it, and they were satisfied and they went away. You know, his question to eBay was, you know, why did you give him my records? And eBay said, oh, we didn't give him your records. Well, let me tell you, one little twist to this, you know, library bookstore tell-all policy is that there's also a provision in the USA Patriot Act that imposes a gag order on the library, on the bookstore, and makes it illegal for them to inform you that your records have just been subpoenaed and provided. Okay? All right. Here's another one. Student records. This really affects universities terribly. At least one of the terrorists was in the country on a student visa, so they've really tightened up what's going on at the universities now. The government has complete access to student records without a subpoena. Okay, without a subpoena. Before the Patriot Act, we had the Family Education Records and Privacy Act. It was passed in 1974, kind of came about in a Vietnam War protest on the university campuses, which allowed, gave students privacy rights. But the U.S. Patriot Act amends that now, and it requires schools to disclose all student records. Now, let's just think about what they have. They don't just have the fact that I got a D in chemistry, but they know what courses I've taken, they know what professors I've taken the courses from. They have all my student records completely, whether I've been disciplined, you know. They also have access to all my financial aid records, which show all my family's assets and liabilities, and they know who recommended me for school and who didn't. And then if I got a couple of things done at the student medical center, they got the medical records from the student medical center too. And all of this is without my knowledge, and it's without my consent, and the school cannot tell me. I'm just under the same type of gag order requirements. Okay? Let's just sort of move out of schools now and talk about credit and bank records. They believe that some of the terrorists use false social security numbers to open up accounts, so though the government already has access to huge amounts of financial data, they now require banks, securities brokers, mutual fund firms to verify the identification of anybody who opens up the new account, determine whether their name appears on any kind of a list of, you know, maybe a no deposit list or a no withdrawal list, like the no fly list, a list of suspected terrorists. So the Patriot Act modifies the Bank Securities Act that made at some point CIA and FBI and any other law enforcement have a subpoena to be able to get those records. Okay, what about that area that's very near and dear to my heart as a lawyer, and that's attorney-client privilege, attorney-client conversations. Ashcroft has a new internal rule, a policy rule within his office. This is not part of the Patriot Act. This is some of the stuff that he's done, which he now, as a matter of department policy, allows his agents to monitor phone calls between lawyers and clients. So, you know, all the wiretapping and the phone monitoring stuff, he's not making any exception for the fact that it could be attorney-client stuff. If he believes, if there's some reasonable suspicion that the conversation in some way may lead to some kind of terrorist act. Okay, so there's a San Diego lawyer, a Muslim, who believes that his phone has been tapped since last fall, and that his computer has been searched, but the FBI won't either confirm or deny that. You know, with the AG sort of giving his department unchecked power to be able to listen to conversations between a client and an attorney without court permission. And the only thing that he has is this reasonable suspicion. Oh, I'm sorry, this is for prisoners. If you're in jail, okay? I mean, you don't have much privacy as it is. And the only area that you might have privacy is when you talk to your lawyer. Well, the AG has taken that away too now, and all he has to do is, in his opinion, he makes a determination whether he has some kind of a reasonable suspicion that this prisoner may be communicating to his lawyer to in some way facilitate terrorism, and then they can secretly record what's going on inside that attorney-client room in the prisons. I mean, Lynn Stewart is a very long-standing civil rights lawyer in New York. And she's now been charged with aiding terrorism based on secretly recorded attorney-client communications with one of her clients in New York. I mean, right to counsel, think about it. I mean, it's one of the fundamentals that we have. How can you get an effective defense if you can't be free and open with your attorney? How can your attorney fashion a defense for you if you can't tell him the bad and the good? But, you know, frankly, this is all unnecessary stuff anyway. I mean, freely wiretapping and listening in on these conversations, because the Justice Department already can listen into attorney-client conversations pre-Patriot Act, but they just had to go get a subpoena and show that there was, you know, some reasonable cause to do it. Okay, roving wiretaps. Now, how about this one? All they have to do is file a certified request with the court for a roving wiretap, and what that means is that they tap the phones in such a way so that wherever you use a telephone, they're allowed to tap that phone or that computer system. So that means that you, as an employer who may have a Middle Eastern employee, may find that your business computer is being tapped because you happen to be employing someone that somebody somewhere thinks is, you know, a potential terrorist. So the web of infringement just becomes greater and greater. I mean, it's conceivable that all the payphones in some particular neighborhoods could be tapped. I mean, when you think about it.
You are listening to RISE, Radio Internet Story Exchange. This is a speech by ACLU attorney Judith Volkart called Taking Liberties, Can Our Constitution Survive the War on Terrorism?
Okay, so what about internet web surfing? The terrorists were supposed to have communicated to one another from internet cafes. And the Patriot Act boosts, you know, the federal power to be able to trace this internet traffic. All they have to do is certify again a certificate saying that it's relevant to an ongoing criminal investigation, and they can get the subpoena to do it. And, you know, this stuff is not just directed at non-citizens, folks. I mean, it's everybody. It's you and it's me. You know, when you add to all that the information sharing provisions, you can just imagine that what's happening to our privacy rights. Now, there's the whole subject of person-to-person spying. You know, we're sort of becoming a Cuban-style, you know, neighborhood spy network among us all. The Homeland Security Act, it's going to put $230 million aside for what they call a citizen's core. And a citizen's core is really a variety of programs that are really there to engage Americans to become involved in sort of Homeland Security efforts on your, you know, in your own block. And it's got stuff in it like doubling the money that is being given to Neighborhood Watch programs. Remember Neighborhood Watch? I mean, it started up years ago, and someone reminded me tonight it was out of the drug war, too. You know, watching for pot and drug treaties and stuff in your neighborhood. That's already been tripled. That budget was tripled last fall. The Homeland Security Department is going to be able to double that money. And what they did last fall, when they tripled the federal allocation for that, they also changed the purpose of Neighborhood Watch. They're also charged with eliminating terrorism. So, you know, that jerk that lives next door to you, you know, is like a vigilante now, and he's going to be funded. So there's Neighborhood Watch. You know, it's Bush. I mean, he's called on the public to report suspected activities, so people are doing it, flying the flag and feeling like they're being very American. We had a horrible thing happen in Forestville. There's a multiracial couple who were turned in by their neighbors, and they were visited by an FBI agent at their home because the neighbor said that they had, you know, suspicious-looking dark-skinned people there, and they actually had a friend from Brazil who was visiting, okay? But it didn't just stop there. I mean, they came, they investigated, they talked to them, they talked to the kids. The next day, they showed up at the kids' school. They talked to the principal and the teachers of the two children. They showed up at the workplace of each one of these two adult people and talked to their employers, okay? You know, we found out about this, and we went to them and said, is this true? And they said, yes. Is there anything we can do? And they said, you know, I mean, and this is how everybody's feeling. We just want to be left alone. You know, we just want to live our lives. We don't want to cause trouble. You know, we just want to be left alone. And that's how the immigrant community is feeling. You know, they don't want to be focused on. They just want their lives. You know, TIPS. What's TIPS going to do? I mean, it's been at least, thank goodness, to the Congress that was in effect last session, but that can change because TIPS has not been completed yet. But, you know, it really is a program where it enlisted postal workers, UPS, DHL, utility workers and other people to access private homes and report suspicious activity. And it's been pared back now. It's supposed to now only be maritime shipping and trucking. But what it does do is it also includes a provision that gives the person who reports the information complete immunity in the event that the information causes you personal damage or happens to be incorrect. Right. Here's the last of it, the secrecy thing. I mean, there is a veil of secrecy about this administration that really does threaten any kind of effective check and balance. Any expansion of government authority really should be matched by a corresponding power in one of the two other branches, and that just hasn't happened. That principle has been strictly violated. You know, the House Judiciary Committee just a few months ago that has oversight over the Justice Department brought Ashcroft in, and they asked him questions, very specific questions, like how many times have you asked for records from libraries and bookstores? And how many times have you imposed roving wiretaps? And how many United States citizens have been subject to your surveillance orders? And he has refused to respond to the committee. I mean, he has refused. And they've let him get away with that. And it's not likely to change. and the Freedom of Information Act that I talked about a few minutes ago, which really is the act that allows you and I to be able to open up the veil of government and ask government to provide us with, you know, do you still have my file from the Vietnam days? You know, you can get from government the records that they have on anything that's not strict national security. And a lot of those files were opened up in Clinton's administration. Tons of those files were declassified so that they are now open to the public. But what Ashcroft has done through an internal Justice Department policy is he's instructed his people in the Justice Department, do not respond to FOI requests. And we haven't been able to get a response out of them for months. So is it that successful? I mean, is it successful? Is it really making you feel safer? Getting to the point now where actually I sort of like it, because local law enforcement is getting a little angry. You know, they're responding to all these cranks that are calling them up on the phone. They're overloaded with, you know, people reporting people, and they are beginning to get a little ticked that they're just not, you know, they're spending resources doing stuff that they really would rather not be doing. They're beginning to realize that when they go out and interview Muslim men, you know, that they may just have some problems with the community after they do that. You know, the 5,000 mostly Muslim men who were interviewed since last September 11th, of all those that were interviewed, there were a few visa violations that were found, and there was absolutely no one charged with any crimes. There was no ongoing investigations that continued out of that. But there were 5,000 people who were interviewed because they were young male Muslims from Middle Eastern countries. So what have we got to look forward to? Well, there's still some stuff coming down the plank. The first is this Homeland Security Department, okay? It's supposed to be the most significant transformation of the U.S. government in half a century, so hold on to your hats. It's creating a cabinet-level agency that is going to be another executive power because he's got another appointment to make to his cabinet. We've got the military tribunals that are still kind of up for grabs. We don't know what's going to happen with all that stuff. You know, Bush has been trying to categorize a lot of people who are being arrested in the area of terrorism as enemy combatants. I mean, that's these guys sitting in Guantanamo. And instead of trying them in judicial courts that we all know, love, and sometimes hate, they want to put them into military tribunals. What does that mean? That's those court-martial courts. And if you've served in the service, you know how helpless you are there. There is no presumption of innocence, okay? It's a different place. It's a different world. And not only do they want to try these people in military tribunals, but Mr. Bush, who was, you know, the great executor when he was in office in Texas, he's asked that these military tribunals now begin to be able to have the authority to issue the death sentence, which they have not been able to do yet. And Rumsfeld, who heads, you know, I mean, even the New York Times is calling him, you know, Rumsfeld runs rampant. You know, he's an egomaniac, and that's the way the press is portraying him. The general mainstream press is portraying him now, so I can't imagine what he's really like. So, you know, that's another thing to watch out for. Oh, the church guidelines. I don't know if any of you remember the church guidelines, but remember, it was right about after everybody went through the 50s and through the Martin Luther King and the excesses of the FBI investigating particularly the religious organizations, because King was, you know, based with these religious organizations that were getting their folks in the South all stirred up. The church committee and the Congress put together some very strict guidelines about limiting FBI power, being able to conduct fishing expeditions of particularly religious groups, and domestically spying on organized groups within this country. And Ashcroft has now gone to Congress and asked that they reconsider the church guidelines. He wants the ability, especially since you can sort of link the terrorists with certain religious Islamic Muslim organizations, wants now to be able to have relaxed guidelines so that he can begin these fishing expeditions again. I mean, that was such an ugly chapter of our history, and we're going to have to go through it again. So I come tonight to you with a mandate for action. You have got to do something. You know, the ACLU was already really busy when the U.S. Patriot Act. You know, we can't do it alone. You know, what can you do? I mean, there is so much that you can do. I am so happy to see this room overflowing and to see all of your attentive faces. You know, where can you start? You can start right here in Willits. and in Mendocino County by organizing, getting coalitions started between, you know, religious organizations, political organizations, concerned citizens, your new committee here that's just been established, to go to city and county councils and begin raising the issues, getting them, proposing to them, beginning debate by submitting resolutions that say that this city council, this county, supports the constitutional right to express opposition to anti-civil liberties provisions of the USA Patriot Act, so that it's clear that in your community you're allowed to speak out without being branded as unpatriotic, and that your county and your city condemns profiling and scapegoating of immigrants. Go to your local police departments. Don't go alone. And ask them to hold their feet to the fire and ask them to begin to report by city or by county, and not to accede to any requests from federal law enforcement, because those requests have been coming down from the federal government, asking local law enforcement to be part of their campaign to ferret out the federal crime of terrorism. The 5,000 interviews that were conducted, Justice Department actually contacted local police departments and asked them to conduct the interviews, and many, many police departments refused to do it. Oakland refused to do it, San Jose, San Francisco. The California Chiefs Association, which is sort of like the management committee of the police departments, they took a position that the police departments wouldn't do it. I mean, they're busy too. They got other stuff to take care of. And they began to recognize that by going and knocking on the doors of people who are not suspected of crimes could just sort of, you know, harm their ability to be able to have good community relations. Hit the California congressional delegation. You know, your representatives in Congress and mine voted for the Patriot Act. They need to know that we are not happy with that. Hold them accountable. You know, tell them you want them to work to repeal these provisions as soon as possible, the ones that infringe our civil liberties. State and local school boards and universities, you got a school here, ask them to develop some guidelines to ensure that there's an environment on that campus for free expression. There's already been action that's been taken at University of Berkeley, which is the birthplace of the free speech movement, against students who are speaking out against the Patriot Act and other federal provisions. Go to your local libraries. Tell them, the Sonoma County Library, they've taken a position that they are going to destroy their records every month. That's their response. Get your libraries to destroy their records every month. As long as they have a policy of doing that, hey, all they get is, you know, a couple months of stuff that you rented or checked out. Again, going to like the Attorney General and asking him to issue a recommendation to law enforcement that they not accede to any requests from federal law enforcement for cooperation in any investigation that violates the California constitutional right to privacy. We are very lucky in this state. The first sentence of our state constitution gives us a constitutional right to privacy. We do not have that in our United States Constitution. So we can say, hey, in California, we hold you to a stricter standard. Senator Feinstein, But, you know, after the stuff happened on the campus, University of California campus, about the stuff that was happening with the dissenters, she actually wrote a letter to FBI Director Robert Mueller and asked him, you know, what protections are being put in place to ensure that there's free speech? You know, you may hate it, but write her a letter, thank her for doing it. Tell her you oppose Operation Tips and you expect her to get in there and continue to fight for the right of privacy and the right of free speech. Racial profiling, okay? I mean, there's so much backlash going on now, and if we thought it was bad against blacks and Latinos and some Asians in some communities within the California, it's now spreading to people of darker skin, Middle Eastern folks who can be identified as Middle Eastern. You know, there are fewer and fewer of us now who are left to be targeted. There are, unfortunately, you know, some law enforcement agencies have really, really dramatically raised their profiling practices. And, you know, under that sort of misguided belief that if you eradicate those people who look different, that somehow or another you're safer. You know, and the last thing you can do, I mean, I don't know if it'll make you feel any better or not, starting off a letter with Dear George, but, you know, write the letter and tell them, you know, the Bush administration has compromised the very civil liberties that we all have grown to expect and treasure the most in the country. So urge him, you know, that he can keep America both safe and free. So where are we now? Where are we in it? So this is not easy stuff to do, and it's not stuff that can be done alone. Coalition building is the only way to organize. It also provides you with some personal protection. I mean, we know now that much government activity is shrouded in secrecy. Race and religion have now become proxies for suspicion. The government has increased spying on law-abiding citizens, and it's encouraged me to spy on you and you to spy on me. The Bush administration policies really deny due process to all Americans and not just to immigrants. So what do we want? We look to government to keep us safe, especially during troubling times, and these are troubling times, but we have to ask them to do that and still respect our rights along with it. You know, we ask that they keep us safe and free. We need to guard against these short-term trade-offs that are made in the heat of the moment, which really are going to erode and are eroding, have eroded, many of our fundamental freedoms. And freedom, it's what most of us love about America, and it's freedom that I am here fighting to defend. So we can either follow our fear, or we can be led by our values, and the choice is up to you. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to ACLU attorney Judith Volkart speaking on November 15, 2002 in Willits, California. Her speech was called Taking Liberties, Can Our Constitution Survive the War on Terrorism? The event featuring Ms. Volkart's speech was endorsed by the Mendocino County Bill of Rights Defense Committee. They are part of a nationwide grassroots movement started by the Northampton Bill of Rights Defense Committee in Massachusetts. Since the Northampton Civil Liberties Safe Zone resolution was passed, 16 other cities and counties have successfully passed similar resolutions, and nearly 40 other cities and counties have resolutions in progress. You are listening to RISE, Radio Internet Story Exchange, a weekly public affairs program helping you to ask questions, find answers, and distinguish the truth from the lie. Special thanks to Dan Roberts of the Shortwave Report for recording Judith Volkart's speech. The Shortwave Report can be heard on www.outfarpress.com. And the website of the ACLU is www.aclu.org. Radio Internet Story Exchange is produced by myself, Kelly O'Ramaris, in part at the studios of radio station KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, California. The website for RISE is www.riseforNews.net. That's RISE, the number 4, news.net. RISE programs are available on demand at the RISE website and are webcast on the news stream of Partytown Streaming Network, www.partytown.com/radio. Radio Internet Story Exchange receives no corporate or foundation funding and depends on you for support. For more information on donating to RISE, receiving or publicizing the program, or giving feedback on programs, please email kellia@riseforNews.net. That's K-E-L-L-I-A at RISE, the number 4, news.net. This has been RISE, Radio Internet Story Exchange. Thanks for listening.